This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 218. In this episode, we're going to talk to Dan Kogan and Vesa Yuvan of Microsoft about some of the updates that they've announced at the Ignite 2017 conference around the SharePoint framework and what we can expect for the rest of the year on the roadmap. Recorded live, September the 28th, 2017.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, and the competitive landscape and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
Send us a tweet, either to the show at MS Cloud Show, or to Andrew at Andrew Connell.
Or Chris at LoungeFlyZ.
As we'd love to connect with you. We're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 5 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check us out at ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
Hey everybody, this is Andrew, and in this episode, I had an opportunity to sit down with Dan Kogan and Vesa Yuvan in a day after Dan's session at the Ignite 2017 conference, where he talked about all of the stuff that they have shipped with the SharePoint framework in the last few months, as well as their current plans and some roadmap stuff that we can expect to see over the rest of the year. As you hear, this is a fairly good-sized interview that we had with them. We talked about 40 minutes or so, and we covered all the stuff that was coming, and then we also kind of elaborated on a lot of the stuff that wasn't covered in the session. So talking a little bit about the community involvement, their feedback, what we can expect for updates going forward, and stuff like that. As you'll hear, they were very busy in this past year. They've released a lot of great stuff. We've got a general availability of extensions. That's probably one of the most popular things that people have been looking for. Those are now available in GA. And we also had a SharePoint framework come to on-prem SharePoint 2016 in Feature Pack 2 that came out about a week ago. So these are two really big announcements, but trust me, there's a whole lot more. So without further ado, let's hear from Dan and Vesa about the SharePoint framework updates in 2017.
What if you could take any process your teams use to get work done and make it happen automatically? What if you could save countless hours and help people work better together? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back, and it flows in and out of the tools that you use every day. With Nintex, work flows so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com. All right, it is Wednesday of Ignite 2017 here in Orlando, doing another one of our interviews today, and I'm sitting here with Vesa and Dan from Microsoft. Why don't you guys give us a, go ahead and introduce yourself real quick for our listeners who may not be familiar with you.
Yep.
Okay, I'll start. Well, thanks, Andrew, for having us here. I'm Daniel Kogan. I'm the group program manager in SharePoint that owns a new developer framework, so the SharePoint framework, as well as some of the other developer bits. So that's sort of what I do. And Vesa?
Yeah, I'm Vesa. I work in a dance team, so I need to be careful of what I'm saying because Dan is in the room. So I'm a senior program manager in the same team, responsible for obviously the pieces of SharePoint framework and also SharePoint patterns and practices.
So. Awesome. So I know this our listeners may be picking up from the title of the episode and also from the from what you guys do. We're going to talk about the SharePoint framework today. Yesterday, you guys had a session where you, or Dan, I guess you presented a session, which was a lot of
kind of a status quo of where we are, roadmappy kind of stuff of where things are going and everything. It was quite a jam-packed session, and even for those of us who are on the inside and kind of know a little bit about what you guys are working on, I think all of us in the front row were like, holy crap, you guys have been busy, and you're going to be busy too. So I guess we'll start it out a little bit. Where are you guys seeing the SharePoint framework kind of adoption kind of going? Where are you seeing customers, how they're adopting it in terms of the uptick and stuff so far?
So I think, well, it is what it is, right? It's a framework for developers. And so what we see is in a lot of cases where people are either looking at adding new business functionality to existing modern experiences if they've already come on board with modern. And so they will use the framework to go and build new modern web parts and so on. And then more recently, and what we announced GA this conference, is the new SharePoint framework extensions that allows them to just add code into sort of well-managed, strongly typed parts of the page, but at least you can put your custom code now into a modern page in the service. So that's sort of one model. And then the other model is people who are still using classic pages, but either are already realizing they will be making the journey to modern or to the cloud from on-prem. And so the next investment should be something that will pay dividends as they move forward. Or simply, they now have people who are good web front-end developers and not necessarily SharePoint gurus, and they're going to be able to take advantage of our new toolchain, our new sort of stack, to be able to go and add value to their SharePoint environment. So it's a little bit of everything. It's a people that are looking to really embrace the new modern stuff and need to do their own thing. It's a little bit the folks that are trying to hedge their bets on how do I get ready for the next thing. And then there's people that are like, no, this is just the tool set that I like and that I'm comfortable with. And so I'm glad I can use them for the classic stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And one thing to actually add, it's not directly on, let's say, the third party usage, but like Dan said in the session really well, it's super, super amazing to see all of the new capabilities within SharePoint Online, and they're all based and built on top of SharePoint Framework,
yep.
Which basically means that you, as a third-party developer, can do exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
with certain caveats, but
that's right. Still. For us, it's great, right? We validate our own framework by looking what the team in Redmond builds, and we say, hey, the team in Redmond needs to be able to do X. If they need to do it, surely our customers need to do it. How do we make this available? And so we keep sort of going back and forth around the Redmond folks push us to make sure that we support them. And then we hear things from the customers and the MVPs push us. And we realize, okay, we're hearing it from a couple of places. This is the next big thing that we need to go do.
Yeah, kind of a hot button kind of thing. A good way to check the temperature. That brings up another question that I was going to have for you guys is that, how much are you seeing internal usage of the SharePoint framework for a lot of these new experiences that they're creating with hub sites, communication sites, and some of the other ones? I think with the new admin dashboard, SharePoint admin dashboards, as well. How much of your feature set, your backlog, is being driven by the internal of what they need and the stuff is coming out from the outside?
So it's an interesting thing. So some of it is directly someone says, hey, we need to do X. And let's be frank, extensions was one of those.
Yeah.
So we have a team internally that went and did a wonderful modern experience for new libraries and lists, and came to us and said, hey, we need to be able to add code. How do we do this? And so we deliver extensions. So that's a direct thing of they have a need, we deliver. But then there are other things where, you mentioned the Admin Center. The Admin Center guys really went and built on top. They're not using our pages model. They're just using SPFX and, some framework stuff and Fabric UI. But they went ahead and picked that tool set and did their work, and it wasn't until after that that we realized that they were even our customer, right? So it was like, wow, these guys are using our stuff. And for us, that's super validating, right?
Sure.
So we see people adopting it because it seems and feels like the right tool set for them, as opposed to because we have to go push them. And so then we feel really, okay, that validates a model, that validates the tools.
Gotcha.
And then on the question, it's a leading question, obviously, with the follow-up question, which I'll jump into directly, because probably it's also let's be also clear on the fact that there's a lot of the new capabilities which we released this week, are actually targeted for third party. So it's absolutely true, like Nan said, we address those things in the first part of things, but then there are functionalities like, let's say, the Microsoft Graph, better Microsoft Graph support, or the web API support for Microsoft Graph. It's not targeted for first party,
right.
It's targeted for third party. And a lot of that is the enterprise requirements, enterprise stuff, the feedback what we get from MVPs, and the feedback we are gathering from community calls and all of our other social channels.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, it's interesting to see how much you guys are leveraging it too. I mean, I get this question a lot from people. I think that there's a certain number of customers out there that don't understand this concept of what first party and third party means. First party being Microsoft. You guys are using it to build your stuff. Third party being people like me. I don't work for Microsoft. I'm using it to build my things. But the fact that everyone is both groups of people are using the framework, everybody gets to benefit from it, but it also shows that the commitment that Microsoft has to this model.
Correct. I think that's an important way to see it, right? It's not just that this is the model that we're asking people to use, it's a model that we're embracing. Mm-hmm. So that sort of, if you're looking at it from the outside looking in, that should give you some confidence that, well, A, Microsoft is betting their portals and their business on this, so this is the new way to do it. And B, it allows us to, as I said in my session the other day, we feel your pain, right? In the past, that wasn't necessarily true. Now, you know, everything V1 always has some rough edges, and we feel those rough edges just as soon, if not sooner, than our customers and our MVPs. And so we sort of are incentivized, as let's say, to go and do the right thing, because we want to fix those problems just as much as you guys want those problems fixed.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit about some of the progress you guys have made, or things that you've released in the last few weeks. We've seen a couple things ship in the last few weeks that were pretty big ask items that were kind of came out of left field. We knew that you guys were working on it, or you know, some you guys have said that you were working on some of this stuff, and some of it was just kind of out of left field, like the whole tenant scope deployment. So why don't we share about some of the things that you guys have shipped recently leading up to Ignite that people can take advantage of today.
So I think back in mid-August was the tenant scope deployment version.
Yep.
It's actually pretty weird because it's an old release at this point, and it's mid-September. Yeah, the old release.
That was a while ago. That was August. Yeah.
But the key big point of that one is that before that release, you were essentially forced to install your SharePoint framework solution to a site to get the functionality available. So have the web part available, have the extensions available. Now, as part of that release, that was really the key objective of the release, is that we have a tenant scope option. If you set the properties in a certain way within your solution, whenever the solution is set with the app catalog, voila, it is available within all of the sites within a site within the tenant, and without any explicit installation. Because right now, we don't have an APIs to automate and add in our solution installation to the site. It enables stuff to be deployed on the
coming soon though.
Yes, the ALM APIs are coming soon too. Yes.
There's a couple things in that one bit. I mean, there's two or three things that we know that are coming soon that we'll get to in just a bit. That spiderweb off that tenant scope deployment that's going to open up things. So,
and obviously the second big thing which was released like what was it, a week before Ignite, which is kind
that
of
was
weird.
A long time ago now.
A long time ago as well. Well, we didn't release a new version of SharePoint framework.
The week of Ignite is about 6 weeks long for us. So
trust me, and the week of Ignite feels like it's about 6 weeks long.
That's
just
right.
Being in that week.
Absolutely. But that was the on-premises support. So as part of the SharePoint 2016 feature pack two, you can now use modern web parts and use SharePoint framework to create your web parts in the right way. When we went live with that one, we didn't release a new version of Yeoman template. So the story, we have a video out which I recorded, which is explaining how do you fall back on a previous version and have it documented. Now with the new version which went live, the Yeoman Generator 1.3, which went live on Monday morning, which is super cool. We were sitting in the same room, clicking buttons, and bum, bum, bum.
Actually, that might be the first time we've ever released a feature from a conference.
Yes. Right.
We usually announce features at conferences,
yes.
But Vesa, myself, and our engineers, we were all sitting in a room here at Ignite launching the feature from Ignite. So that was, we actually should have mentioned that on stage. We didn't, but that was very cool.
That's really cool.
That's fun. It's fun. It's a little scary too. Like,
no, it was all good.
It's all been tested. We're good.
But yeah, as with 1.3, the on-premises support is much better. So you can actually, when you use the latest version of Yeoman Generator, it's going to ask you, are you creating the solution for SharePoint 2016 and online, or only to online? Because SharePoint 2016, it is a forked version, which had to be forked a few months ago, because it was shipped to the on-premises, so it doesn't support all of the latest and greatest in extensions or framework.
Yeah, and I think the work that we've done in the new Yeoman Generator 1.3 is sort of a good example of the story that we're trying to tell, right? We are taking very seriously this idea of the things that you build need to be available in all our environments. We will take the responsibility to make sure things are backwards compatible and so on. And over time, on-prem and the cloud do diverge, right? Every couple of years, it comes back together, we make a release, and then diverge again. And so we've taken the responsibility to say, if you're gonna make the bet and you're gonna invest in this model, we'll make sure that the thing you build on-prem will work for you in the cloud. And so the Yeoman Generator 1.3 now has that sort of intelligence that we'll be able to say, oh, this is a package intended for what use case? Okay, here's the correct framework. Here are the components that you need, rather than asking the developer to upfront A, understand the difference, and B, figure out what the right parts are.
Right, right. So I have two questions about that. So first, when let's say I've gone through and I've built something, when I go to build something with a new 1.3 generator, and I say, this is gonna be for on-prem. And so it kind of self-selects me into a couple, okay, today I don't get extensions, today I don't get one or two other things.
It kind of downscales you to the minimum bar that's the on-prem version, because the on-prem version is always a little bit more sort of static, right? Yeah. We made a fork, we shipped at a point in time, we're not upgrading your on-prem every 3 weeks, and so you get the latest on-prem thing.
Is it, okay, so let me, and a couple things about that. So is it, you mentioned in your session yesterday, this was enlightening, that it was about 5 months ago is when the snap happened. So that was what the SharePoint framework was 5 months ago is
correct.
What is what we're getting in feature pack two. So we know we're about a 5 month delay or trail behind
today,
it.
Yes. Yeah. Come back a year from now, when you go to the next version of on-prem, you will have been 18 months or whatever, right?
Sure, right. Yeah. The day that we're recording this, right?
Yeah.
But it was a 5 month snap from the day that we had that shipment and stuff. Okay. Now, if I've gone through and I've actually said I want this to be on-prem, and I decide that, hey, I want to take this, the thing that I've built, and say, no, I really want to make this for Office 365. I really want to go online for this. Mm-hmm. What under the covers? What am I doing there? Am I just updating a couple packages? Is there a flag that you can set or something that I can take, or is it like, can I take the existing project I have and upsize it? And put air quotes.
You can upsize that by updating the version, the NPM packages versions.
Yeah, you can manually modify your package to point to the right components if you choose to upsize.
Yes. Okay.
Is that the only thing though that I'm really dealing with? Is it just the packages that are being updated?
All the packages is the difference. Yes.
Okay. So when I rerun the generator a second time and say I want to add extensions now to this thing, is there a flag anywhere I have to set to let it know that, hey, this is now an online project or it's not an on-prem?
It should actually recognize that. There is actually a flag in the Yo SRC file, if I remember correctly.
In the Yo RC,
the
RC
file, JSON, which is saying that it's an on-prem version, if I remember this correctly. We were looking into that from a documentation perspective last week, but it's not yet documented. But the scenario of first creating an on-premises solution, then
upgrading it to the cloud.
Yeah, we absolutely get it documented at some point. It's not. It's not a P0 documentation requirement.
Sure. Yeah. And I'm just making sure that, you know, when people understand that when they go to create their project, they're not going down a dead end road.
Exactly.
They can.
Correct. They can.
Right. There's no file new project that I got to go through again to copy code.
Although the business use case is perhaps a little bit of a stretch, right? If you're creating something for on-prem, unless you've managed to get to the point where you're turning your on-prem off, right? It's odd to now say, now we're going to upgrade to the online version. What happened to the on-prem guys? That's not compatible. Right. So the interesting part of that is you sort of have this almost forced baseline if you have an on-prem environment and you want to share code. Now, the flip side of that is, hey, I already have this thing. I've done most of the work. I don't need to share code. I'll just repurpose that and just make another version of it that's for the cloud that is close, but more. right? And so there's a couple different ways people can go through that.
Is the snap to, another question I had for you is, I mean, you guys are using the term that it's, that you take a fork, right, from where it was. Is it correct to think about this almost as just like a branch where it's really not a fork? I mean, you've created a branch that's snapped off of the main branch that we have that's going on SharePoint Online, and it's the next time when another feature pack ships or when it gets upgraded again, it really is going to be taking, at a certain point, taking master and merging it back into that on-prem thing.
So that's the way to think
it's still the same. Everything is still the same. It's just different things are supported on-prem.
Right. Yes. We will not continue to innovate on the on-prem one unless there are bug fixes and so on. We continue to innovate in the cloud and then once again branch off from that and merge it back into what you have on-prem at some future date, right?
Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm making sure of. Okay, so those are some of the big things that we've shipped just recently. What kind of things also that you guys, that you can talk about that you've shipped or you're shipping at Ignite? You did the 1.3 generator, but there was a couple other things I thought I saw.
Well, Bess, the massive deal is the SharePoint framework extensions. We mentioned that, but let's be super, super clear. It's now GA. It's available across the Office 365, across all of the tenants, and you're going to start using them. I just had a customer meeting this morning. Where the customer representatives were figuring out that we can't go to the modern because we can't do certain things. And it's like, well, actually,
you can.
As of right now, you can. As of 2 days ago.
Yeah. What do you mean you can't? You're 2 days late.
Love this new world.
And the second thing you mentioned already was the tenant properties, which has been now shipped in the first release version. That's in first release, so it's kind of in preview, but it's...
Do you want to talk a little bit about extensions and the model and how people use them? And
yeah, well, for the extensions, actually, yeah, let's talk about this. So for extensions, because not all of the listeners are super clear probably on this, so we have three different extensions. We have the application customizer, and that gives you an opportunity of embedding your JavaScript on every single page within a site or a site collection.
Great use case, like throwing Google Analytics or App Insights into your SharePoint site.
Simplistic scenario for doing that. Or if you need to, you can override, or you have current date places on the UI, a header section, top section and a bottom section. We used the terms header and footer when we started, but then long discussions, it's now top and bottom. I don't care. It's the top.
Just the name.
Yes,
exactly. Just the name, actually, enumeration.
There are two slots, one at the top of the page, yes. One at the bottom of the page, call them what you want.
And what it means is that they're kind of a content placeholders, or they are content placeholders. But what was it? It was content template controls, was it? Back in SharePoint on-premises timeframe. You can embed your JavaScript and your functionalities and your branding and your element on those sections, and we'll guarantee that they will be
the delegate controls.
Delegate controls,
that's right.
Yeah, I need to remember that. Yeah. I've done quite a few of them in my past career, but still. But it is like the modern delegate control. For those who are familiar with the farm solution model, you can add buttons, you can add functionalities, and execute them in script when somebody clicks those. Now, that's application customizer. We had also the list view command sets, so adding actual buttons to the context menu or in the toolbar of the list and libraries. So, and opening dialogs, opening side panels, and doing operations for the items, combining, checking, sharing, combining items, getting information from the items. It's just infinite options of what will happen when you click the button. Mm-hmm. You have all the power of execute whatever code when that happens. And the last one was the field customizer. So overriding the rendering of a field value, all the field, let's say the section in the list of the field, based on your business requirement. And again, it can be as complex as possible. It could be buttons, it could be whatever for that particular item. And it's up to you on what happens.
So. It's cool. I mean, all of these things, the extensions, it really is bringing more parity to what we used to be able to do in the old model of doing the development and bringing those same capabilities over to the new model in the SharePoint framework, so client-side-based development, but also to be able to extend the modern experience that way.
Sure. And maybe one thing to mention that, because it's always the comparison between the classic and modern. And let's be super clear on this one as well. We've been trying to update the messaging on this one. It is about the experience. So it's not like the extensions are only available within the modern team sites or in the group team site. No. The modern experience, SharePoint framework extensions and SharePoint framework is available in the modern experience, also in a classic team site. So what it means is that if you have a classic team site, you can actually go and update the classic team site to have, first of all, a modern page, welcome page, And then lockdown, the classic team side to have a modern experience. And then you can use SharePoint framework extensions and all of that to get it modernized completely.
And the other thing you talked about too that was released, we kind of skipped over a little bit, was the template, or the tenant properties.
Yes.
So is it accurate to say that that's just like the property bag we have like on an SP web or an SP site, but now it's on a SP tenant?
Yeah.
That's a very simple way to think about it.
Just name value pairs.
Correct. Yep, name value pairs that your admin manages, and then you can reference when you're writing your code for your extension or your modern web part or whatever.
But the admin is the one that can manage it. You can't, your code can't write to those things.
So today your code cannot write to that. We are looking through what those scenarios mean and how, you know, what if anything we want to do there. But today it's admin managed, and we were very deliberate about that because we felt that it would allow us to sort of roll out in a way that we knew predictably what was going to happen. Somebody made a decision, this is what's there, that's a customer's prerogative, sure, as opposed to having to figure out what the developer of the web part is doing, did someone consent, and so those are just far more complex scenarios. This was just a simple way to get out the door fast.
Is there any limit on how much stuff you can put in that? Like, can I stick a giant JSON blob in there if I wanted to?
You can. It's a string value, basically. So we might have some sort of a massive technical limitation on it, which that's a good point.
Let us know once you find it, Andrew.
Yeah.
And you'll probably find it.
So I have this JSON, it didn't fit. Well, sorry.
Well, I have a demo when I show off the extensions where it's the SpaceX SharePoint list. Mm-hmm. So it's got a list of all the SpaceX missions, and it goes out. There's an app customizer. It shows at the top and the bottom, next mission, last mission. Field customizer shows the mission patch, and the buttons allows you to see press kit and all that other stuff. And then the template properties, what I'd like to do is, instead of going every time and fetching all this data from a remote REST API, I'd like to cache it somewhere. There's different options of being able to do it. And so I was thinking, let's put it inside the template properties or the tenant properties. Can't really do that because I can't write that stuff. I can't write to it from the web part. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking, how much data can I stick in this? I'm thinking a cache place.
On the caching, we were looking into this caching option. It wasn't actually listed on the announcements of things, but I think it's we're being anyway pretty transparent and open on what we're thinking. So we are absolutely understand the caching requirement. Mm-hmm. We're looking into solving that. There is a version for first-party web parts already partly being used, and we're looking into exposing that for third-party as well.
Caching on the on the server side by you guys? No kidding. So I could write something and say, hold on to this. I'll come back to the web part and use it later?
Let's put
top of mind for the team.
Yeah. Yeah.
We fully understand the business requirements in the scenario. We have on several whiteboards in Redmond ideas on how we will approach this. Yeah. So we're working through it. We do not have a feature or an announcement yet, but we get it. Like, we absolutely understand, and we are looking to sort of satisfy people on this. So I think sort of stay tuned.
That's awesome. That's
hopefully
cool.
Nobody has cleaned the whiteboards.
That's right. while we're at Ignite, maybe someone cleaned it. No one's ever cleaned my whiteboard. We'll be fine.
Except for this one time. so that's fantastic. And I know the tenant property too. As a personal like shout out there, this really shows how you guys are responsive to like what people are asking for and stuff, because that feature, I don't know if it was myself and Victor Whelan that actually came up with the feature or something, but I know we were in the discussions from a dev kitchen that we had.
So
just a sidebar conversation.
So let me say how that came about. There's probably four different people who will each say it was their feature.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And as a result, once we sort of get critical mass of people telling us the exact same feature, architected pretty much in the exact same way, with the exact same business scenarios, we tend to see the pattern. And we thought, wow, there's a feature we could build.
We can make four people happy.
That's right. And to be fair, that is our sort of intention, right? Like, we see our sort of development model in SharePoint developer group and the Splat team, my team, very, very basic. We sort of have an idea of where we want to get people to. We dream up where we're going. We share that idea. We get a bunch of very blunt feedback. We go back, we work through that feedback, we produce a bunch of features, we get feedback on what we've built, we tweak that, and we start releasing. So, I mean, it couldn't be more transparent than that. That's really the way we do it.
It's really cool to see it happen like that. Well, something else you did yesterday is you talked about a lot of coming soon stuff, which was all coming soon that's all going to ship or intended to ship by end of year, end of calendar year.
Correct. So we were very deliberate to not try and overpromise and do land grabs into, you know, 18 months into the future. We wanted to be pretty prescriptive about what's coming. Now, we're doing our best to get this stuff in by the end of the year. That was the goal we set for ourselves. What happens, we'll see by the end of the year. But we have a bunch of features. There are so many that I actually have to refer to my list here because I don't even remember. What we did like a dozen announcements in my session yesterday or something like that.
There was a lot of a lot of cell phones taking lots of pictures and lots of tweets.
That's right. So, I mean, some of the, I say simpler stuff, but just simple in the sense that it's easy to talk about, so we'll just sort of rattle them off. We have support for the new Fabric, UI Fabric Core, right? So a lot of our customers and partners and MVPs have said to us, hey, you know, you guys use React. React is great, but, you know, the Fabric React stuff is only if you're using React. I'm not using React. What do I do? I want it to look like SharePoint. I want it to look like Microsoft. But I'm not using React. And so, perfect. New Office UI Fabric Core support from our team should be coming by the end of the year. This stuff is already working and ready to go, just a few minor tweaks.
And maybe to mention on that one also, that we were looking into having that Fabric story solid. We know if you've been trying to use the Fabric, there has been challenges because Fabric is moving so fast, mm-hmm. and their versions are moving so fast, so it causes potentially challenges for the web parts which are using them. So we're kind of trying to clarify that completely as part of this work as well.
Asset packaging, I guess, is the other super cool thing for developers, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to build your package and have it include, you know, your JavaScript, your CSS, or your images, and all of that is in the bundle that you deploy, and then we figure out what needs to go where and what we put in the CDN and so on. So again, that was a feature that came pretty much directly out of feedback that we've heard during our dev kitchens and talking to people. And I believe, you know, probably for a developer, not a big deal, but it's just gonna save time, right? It's just gonna make life that much easier. And so a lot of the theme that we've sort of embarked on for the last few months is not necessarily the next big thing, although extensions clearly was the next big thing for the year, but we've invested quite a bit on how do we help? How do we just fix little things? How do we shave time off the development process? And so 20 minutes here, 30 minutes there, and suddenly, wow, we saved you an afternoon, right? So that's sort of what we've looked at. I don't know.
Absolutely. And just to kind of on that one, let's just be again reiterate what Dan was saying. So currently you have the SPPKG packets, and then you have the JavaScript files that go to the CDN. You need to get them there. You need to set up the CDN. It could be an Office 365 CDN, but then you need to deploy stuff to the app catalog. So the assets included in deployment packages means that everything can be in SPPKG package. You put it in app catalog and we'll figure it out. So if you have a CDN enabled, it will actually figure out where it's enabled and getting stuff deployed.
Now, when we're saying CDN, are we talking just the Office 365 CDN? So this is not that you can't. It's not going to also do the Azure CDN if you have that set up.
At least now, obviously, everything is open for feedback.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the important part is we do it for a CDN. Once we hear what the real requirements are and what people are really looking for, I suspect one CDN is like another CDN, right? Once we've done the initial lifting, it's just a matter of doing the thinking about the next one.
True.
I don't know, other things that we talked about, I guess Site Collection App Catalog?
Site Collection
That's
App
huge.
Catalog?
That's huge.
I don't, absolutely. Again, another feature that sounds simple and the name is pretty self-descriptive, and so it's like, well, we just have a local site catalog. But I think, you know, as a scenario, it's huge, right? Yeah. Being able to give your site collection its own app catalog, well, A, being able to declare that they have the right to have their own app catalog, that's important. And then once they have their own app catalog, they can go and put things in their app catalog that isn't visible to the other site collections. And so,
huge.
You know, we talked about some simple scenarios. Imagine that I go and I buy something from a vendor that is specific to a vertical, it's an HR thing or it's a finance thing, well, I only want that used in that particular site collection. They have their own site catalog. You can put it there, and only those users in those sites and subsites and pages can use it.
Could be a licensing thing too.
Exactly. That's where I was going to go next, right? You could imagine that, hey, we only paid for 5-user license, and I have 5 users in this group. Let's make sure that they're the only ones that get it, because if you put it globally, suddenly 50,000 users are using it, and you get the bill at the end of the month, right? So, yeah, so I think that's, again, not a huge thing from the sense of like, wow, we reinvented the wheel, but super practical. It's just a everyday time saver, ease of use kind of thing.
Yeah, is that going to be not just for SharePoint Framework, but that site collection app catalog?
It's an app catalog.
So it's an app catalog, so add-ins, same thing.
No, we did nothing special. We took the app catalog and just put it local. Yeah. So it behaves, looks, feels like an app catalog.
Cool, very cool.
I need to do a quick spin-off as well, because we mentioned the app catalog and add-ins. Add-ins will be there as well. Absolutely supported. We will keep on investing on add-ins, so especially provider-hosted add-ins.
I think that's an important thing, right? We're a bit sensitive to that, but you know, people keep saying, oh, you guys are killing add-ins. Like, no, like we're not killing add-ins. We believe that there are appropriate use cases for them. We've heard from a lot of customers, we use them for this or for that. We've heard from ISVs who really rely on the add-ins isolation model because that's important to them. And we've sort of tried to show our best intention here by saying, look, we're bringing your add-ins into the toolbox. The add-ins are now visible in the toolbox. They're a first-class citizen, just like everything else in the modern environment. Yes, they're still your old add-ins. I get that. We're working through that. But the fact that we're surfacing them, the fact that the site collection app catalog behaves the same way, I hopefully shows people where we're going with this going forward.
Well, it also, I mean, add-ins are still useful too. I know there's a feature that I keep harping on you guys about, like I want full page apps. I want full page apps in SharePoint Framework. Add-ins and the SharePoint hosted add-in is still a great way to be able to do that
same single page app kind of experience, right?
Yep. Okay. Still the best way to do it, I think.
True.
Even though I personally, I don't like SharePoint hosted add-ins, but that's maybe my preference.
I'm one of the only ones that keeps cheerleading these things. Like, it still can go client-side. It's great. I mean, I would do SharePoint Framework first, but you can still do a ton of stuff with them. So,
but in the context of add-ins and related on what's being supported, so one of the new things which we're working on is the ALM APIs, which application lifecycle APIs. So basically, support for installing, upgrading, deleting, add-ins and SharePoint Framework solutions in the sites using APIs. So
I thought the way you described that yesterday during the session about time is like, yeah, so I want to be able to install it myself. Well, then go ahead and install it and go ahead and click install. Yeah, but I've got 10,000 sites. Start clicking.
Start clicking.
Now we can actually script it, right? We'll be like, exactly. Once ALM APIs are out, we'll be able to.
Actually. So the number of clicks that we've saved, imagine that. If we could count, we are in the click saving business. There you go.
There's a hashtag for you.
Save a click.
Or 10,000.
Yeah, save 10,000 clicks.
But this is one of those things which is super, super classic requirement. We've been getting this request for, hey, come on, I need to be able to start adding to all of my site collections, 10,000 site collections, and explicitly to the site, not by using the tenant deployed option. The reasons are another, it's been delayed, and now we were bringing that support.
But yeah, I think you can see sort of from the feature set that we're talking about, right? Like, we were very cognizant of how do we help adoption, and adoption both from the developer wanting to get on board this model and adoption of the technology in the enterprise, right? So some of these things might not be super sexy as far as demos go, but from an everyday business point of view, these are going to save huge amounts of time. They're going to simplify the process. They're going to really move things along. And that was the intention of sort of the package of things that we talked about in my session yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the sexy features like an extensions kind of a thing, but it's the infrastructure kind of. This is what really is going to make the foundation of the SharePoint Framework really help solidify it.
On that one, I have to also say this is a good example where we have a creep that will push out first the REST APIs. It's the native support, and we document them, and after that it's being supported. And then obviously we already talked about it internally that, hey, okay, maybe we won't have a native CSM support for this, but let's use the BMP as a community effort then to write the APIs to CSM, the manage code APIs for this. And then BMP PowerShell for having that scripting support for getting the stuff available as well. So that's a good example where we work together with community and our MVPs and contributors even further extend the capabilities.
It's awesome. So another one that you guys talked about yesterday that I know is going to have his old session kind of split out for it on Thursday at the conference. So as just a footnote to the listeners, we are going to have a link to your session, Dan, that you did that we're referring to this stuff. And this other one I want to refer to in just a second. We'll have that in the show notes for everybody to go take a look at and watch the sessions later.
This is the Holy Grail.
Yeah, this is the one that this is like a whole... I didn't know this was coming. This is a cool little thing. I think Wes was really paying attention at the time. Wes Hackett was sitting next to me. He was on his phone, like, tweeting about we were tweeting about one of the other announcements you had. I gave him a nice little shot in the kidneys. He's like, oh, yes. So the web API support. Talk a little bit about what this is.
So right now, if you think about, we released the Craft client already for SharePoint as part of SharePoint framework. However, it has limited scopes. So you can only access the Craft APIs, the information related on the group in a modern site and all of that. Now, what we want to do is to give an opportunity for the tenant administrator to provide additional set of scopes. So you're able to extend what is being exposed for the Craft client or in general for your customization. So if you need to have access or persons need to have access on their email using a Craft, you can do that. Or even better, you can expose third-party web APIs and getting access on them using the access tokens, using the model, which will be easily available for you for your code. And that's really the holy grail, which at least personally, it's like mind-blowing. Because then it means that you have a SharePoint framework web part which can call securely web API, get the identity with the call, and you can use stuff within the identity in the Azure side.
Right. Because I think this is a good example of, as a generic thing in the service, we can only make certain assumptions, right? And so we can't go and say, here, it's open for everyone. So we give certain scopes that we all understand and we can reason over and say, yeah, this is safe. This is acceptable for any enterprise. And yet, a lot of people come to us and like, no, but I'd like to open this. We're like, well, that would be your choice, not our choice. And so we need to be able to figure out a way to do that. Yep. And so this is really now the ability of the things that we configure as a generic thing for the service, plus the things that you've configured as scopes that you are comfortable with and need for your business. And so it's really sort of the next big step in how we do this in the graph.
With this piece here, is it fair to say that this is kind of like what we had with those, I think they were called app proxies or remote proxies, where we had in the add-in model where we could kind of like whitelist an endpoint, and essentially we called the SharePoint from the client and say, hey, I need you to go make this call on my behalf, and you make it in my third-party web API that I've created, my third-party API, whatever, REST endpoint, it's going to get a token that I can then say, I know this came from SharePoint. I know this is a safe call.
Yeah.
And there's nothing stopping a user from, you know, open up the console and then make that call back, because it's still just a client-side call back to SharePoint to triggering that round trip, right? I may be asking too much about a feature that's not available just yet.
I was thinking through the old version as well, but I think so. What we're looking here is that the tenant administrator or the you will have an object within your Azure AD where by default will get you a set of scopes. If the administrator wants to, and which is used by the Craft client in the SharePoint framework.
Is this an app, an identity that I'm, or an app that I'm creating in Azure AD?
It will an app waiting there, which you can configure, or will give you the tools to configure then the scopes for the access point.
So it's going to be, it's your app. I won't be creating my own Azure AD app.
Correct.
To make those calls.
You're extending the one that's there.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll get you the initial one, and then you can add additional scopes to be available. And it is an Azure application or Azure app in
and
Azure.
Perhaps this would be a good follow-up topic for a full in-depth.
Absolutely.
I've already got a bunch of requests for this already, so I'm always going to go deep on this.
But in a simplistic way, the key point here being that you can control which are those Azure information which is available for client-side web parts.
Yep.
That's really the key point.
Awesome.
It might be that people don't even understand what is the scope in Azure. So try to simplify the discussion again.
Totally understand that. Yeah. This is a ton of stuff that you guys have announced this week. And we've been really busy, and we got, as a SharePoint framework developer, we got a lot of stuff to look forward to going up. I've got a lot of plans I gotta make with a course that I have now too. So.
Perfect. That's what we're here, just to make you go rewrite your courses every time we talk.
Well, it's good for customers. They're gonna like it, they get the features and they get updated. So is there anything else that you wanted to share share with our listeners before we wrap this up? I know we've gone a little bit longer than I said we were going to go. I apologize for that. But
I would say that the number one thing is that keeps the feedback coming.
Yeah, so, I was going to say the same thing.
Please participate on our community discussions, community activities, SP Dev Docs repository for discussions, our user voice.
User voice, GitHub, all those, any vehicle that you find that gives us feedback. This is really the model that we've embraced. Like, we really do react to that feedback. It's a little bit different than other parts of the product. Other parts of the product really look at sort of the usage and what people are doing in the product itself. Because we need to sort of deliver the tools to build things, we can't wait until the stuff is out in the cloud. And so we really need that feedback early. And so the more feedback we get, the more solid it's going to be.
Awesome. And that's one of the reasons why we're trying to be as open as possible and transparent as possible on what we're doing and all of that. Now, maybe some of the listeners are like, yeah, but it would be great if you could actually give me a month or a date when you're releasing. And the reality is that we can't. It's just
it would be
possible.
Great if you could, so give me a month or a date when we're releasing.
Let's start so with that note.
I don't think that we're asking that. It sounds like Dan's asking that too. Well, that's awesome. I mean, welcome to the client side, Dev. Welcome to how all this stuff is shipping.
That's right.
Such a fast time, and you know, cloud is always leading on prem, and things ship very fast. So, this has been great. Well, hey guys, thanks a lot for taking the time.
Thanks for your time, Andrew. Thanks for all the support.
Absolutely.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.